have an AA meeting? My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NAVA Club. Where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our life and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, too, I must have this thing. A couple weeks back, I have seen this young lady in this room with her friends sitting up front and I asked them all if they would speak, and they all said yes, and they were very willing, and I'm really impressed with that willingness, so I give you Kathy. Hi, guys. My name's Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm waiting for God to show up and, like, remove this anxiety. So my sobriety date is October 6, 2018. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I have a home group, and I have a service commitment in my home group. So I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Hopefully, I can string it all together in, like, the correct order. I don't know. The first time I drank and used was in utero. My mom is one of us, and my auntie said when I was born I would not stop crying. My parents were really good at hiding their alcoholism. I guess it's just like in the DNA. So she said I'd only stop crying when I was held and when I got attention, which is pretty much true still to this day. So, my mom and my dad, all my step-parents that I ever had met in AA, so I'm an AA baby. I remember sitting in meetings growing up and just wanting to scream, like, why can't y'all just stop drinking? Like, just, it's easy, just don't drink. And that really, like, bit me in the ass because I'm here. But honestly, there's really no other place I'd rather be. I finally am comfortable in my skin. So, growing up, there was always a custody battle between my parents, and finally, around 10, my dad got full custody of me and my older brother. My dad finally found his last victim that stayed around long enough to help raise us. My household, from what I can remember, it wasn't that violent. Like, when my dad finally got full custody of us, it was a pretty simple household. There was little odd things that would happen. Like, I wasn't allowed to watch TV, but then we'd have, like, family movie night, and it'd be, like, Gangs of New York, because it was, like, a history lesson for us, and I never understood that. I couldn't watch movies or, like, go out, but we would have these, like, really serious family sit-downs. It made no sense to me. I never felt like I belonged. I was very uncomfortable in my skin. My skin would crawl. The first, like, suicidal thoughts I had, it was really young. It was, like, 8, 9. And I started self-mutilating. And I just wanted to feel something other than what was going on in my head. I would, like, spend hours outside practicing soccer and just, like, working out because I wanted attention from my dad. And they, like, after doing the step work in the program and realizing, you know, some truths about myself and, like, it wasn't that bad growing up. Yeah, I had some shit that happened. I was touched when I didn't want to be touched. I was taken when I didn't want to be taken. I was put in some really dangerous situations, but I'm an alcoholic through and through. I can't use that excuse anymore. Like, I'm a big girl now. Time to grow up. What are we going to do about it? I have an older brother, and I have two younger brothers. I remember when they were born, I was just so, it was like, there's babies, and I love to watch my parents love the extension of my father. And I always had them, like, on my hip. And I made a decision, like, way too young. I'm going to have 10 kids. I'm going to have a perfect marriage. And I'm just going to raise all these babies. And the love in that household was disciplined. A lot of discipline, a lot of structure. I remember going to school, like, elementary school. And I just wanted to fit in, so I tried everything I could to fit in, whether it be flirting with the boys, or, and I don't know if anybody can remember these, but those, like, rubber bracelets that had colors on them, and if you broke it, that means that you did something, and I had all these bracelets on, and, like, necklaces, and it didn't matter, like, how many friends I had around me, I still felt like nobody loved me, nobody liked me, woe is me, pity, blah, blah, blah. The first time I drank because I wanted to, I was 11. I knew I had a problem when I was 13. I was at a slumber party, and I had convinced the girl that we were having the slumber party at to let me sneak into the pantry. And this girl, I'd gone to a private school my 7th grade and 8th grade year, and she had, like, money. It was, like, this huge house, and immediately my little alcoholic brain was like, I'm gonna manipulate the hell out of her. She's gonna become my best friend because she had something that I wanted. And I was like the public school girl that came to private school, so I automatically felt like I was better and different than everybody, like I'm a badass, like insanity. So I convinced her, like, let's go into the pantry, let's drink. Have you guys ever drank before? They never drank. It was an Episcopalian school. It was like 13 kids. They never drank before. It was so like, but I can be really manipulative. First of all, I'm a woman. Second of all, I'm a daddy's girl. Third of all, I've got all brothers. I was raised with brothers. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic. So it was Goldschlager. That was my first drunk. And of course, like, they barely drank anything, and I think I had, like, a cup, and I remember everyone had gone to sleep, like, a normal, like, what you're supposed to do when you drink, you had a couple, I'm gonna calm down, I'm gonna lay down now. I was still wide awake, alone, laying down on the couch, looking at the ceiling, and thinking, God, I don't ever want to do this again. I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to do this again. And, like, for a brief moment, there was, like, this weight that was, like, lifted off of my shoulder. Like, okay, cool. You don't have to, you know, I felt God. Like, okay, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. I started getting really into sports and weightlifting. I would, like, torture my body again just to feel something other than what was going on in between my head. Just so I could get away from my mind and my thoughts. At this point in life, I'm 12, 13 years old, drinking, like, every now and then, like, on the weekends, little, like, when we'd go to the fair, we'd fill the water bottles up. I was never really afraid of, like, if we get caught, because I had manipulated I had, like, come up with all these stories in my head. Well, she brought it, it's her fault. I didn't know what was in the water bottle. I was a really good friend. I was a really good friend. So my stepmother, the woman that stayed around the longest to help raise me, she starts having kids. And my two little brothers come out. And I get really, really depressed. And I don't really communicate it. But my parents see me, like, isolating and always wearing long sleeves and crying for no reason and locking myself in the room. And when they'd ask me, like, what's wrong? We're here for you. Let's talk about it. I didn't want to tell them. I was terrified to tell them how I really felt. I was terrified to tell them something inside of my heart, something inside of my soul just doesn't fit right. So they put me in therapy naturally. And they put me in, it was my stepmother's therapist. So, of course, in my head, I'm like, I can't open up to this woman. She talks to my mom all day. Like, I can't tell her, like, she's the bane of my existence. Like, I don't like what's going on in my household. I'm the princess. All the attention is supposed to be on me. I start creating, like, another life. I get really into, like, fantasy books. I get really into creating up these scenarios in my head and picturing a life outside of my family. And I had, like, made a commitment to myself. I'm going to move out as soon as I'm 18. My parents hate me. They don't want anything to do with me. Meanwhile, I'd watched my father go from nothing to building this life, this very plush life, this very safe life that he had ripped me, that he had saved me from, basically, from living with my mother. Nothing was ever good enough for me. Nothing. I was given, by the time I was 10 years old, 10, 11 years old, I literally was given everything I ever wanted. Like, I didn't have to ask for anything. I didn't realize that until coming into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, getting a sponsor and working the steps. I could see, now I see the truth in all of it. It really wasn't that bad. It wasn't. I would put myself in dangerous situations. I was 13, 14 years old, hanging out with people I did not need to be hanging out with. I always wanted to be around older people because I felt like they were cooler. I wanted to be around adults. I wanted to be in adult conversations, and I wanted to just listen to everything that they had to say because I was so worried about growing up and, like, taking care of myself. I just wanted to be independent. I think it was, 16, 17. Self-mutilation starts getting pretty bad. And my parents start threatening, hey, you're going to have to get, like, inpatient health. So out of fear, I stopped. My skin was still crawling. But then I found boys. And I would make these fantasy relationships up in my head. Like, I'd have a crush, and I would, like, zone in on that, and I'd obsess about that and think that he's going to solve all my problems, I'm going to be okay. And I would go after, like, assistant weightlifting coach. Like, okay, he's not the coach, and he's still 17, 18, and I'm going to be okay because he's going to take care of me. He'll get me out of the house. Like really good ideas and really good plans in my head. Was still drinking, but only, like, on the weekends. And then my father had committed suicide, and I put my father up on a pedestal. I made him my God. He never asked me to do that. He was, like, my rock. He was my foundation. Like, I'd never seen him cry. He was very just, like, stern, strict, kept me in a bubble. I really didn't respect anybody but my father. Like, I wasn't really afraid of anybody but my father. And he was battling his own demons, just feisty business stuff, and got caught up. He died sober, but he wasn't living in his truth. And I was stuck. Well, I was left with, okay, here's the woman that I have no respect for. I've got two younger brothers. I've got an older brother who's one of us. And I'm not doing this. I don't want to be here anymore. I'm not going to live in this household. And when he had died, it was just off to the races. Like, the chains were broken free, and I was living in a bubble, and now I have all this freedom. I'm 18 years old. I'm a senior in high school. My grades were really good. I was on my way to college, and then I got obsessed with joining the Marines because I had, again, a really good idea of, I'm going to join the Marines, I'm going to become an officer, and then I'm going to become a police officer when I get out of the Marines because they're going to pay for college. And then after a police officer, I'm going to become an investigator, and then I'm going to become a lawyer, and then I'm going to become a judge, and then I'm going to become a governor. I don't know shit about politics. I really don't. Like, I don't. And it was just, I craved and I yearned for power and control, because this inside of my head was just like a hamster wheel. There was nothing going on up there besides insanity and depression and untreated alcoholism. He dies, and I start experimenting, and it goes from just like, drugs are a part of my story. Every time there was alcohol on the table, there was drugs. Every time there was drugs on the table, there was alcohol on the table. Like, it's, I'm an alcoholic through and through. I started experimenting. I got drinking down pat. I knew I loved drinking. I was good at it, but I always ended up alone in a closet crying. But still, it made me feel good. It calmed the demons. It calmed the voices in my head. I started hanging out with some surfing buddies that I had acquired at a kegger. And my dad dies, and one of them has experience with losing a parent like that, and I attached myself to him and fall madly in love very quickly, way too quickly. That poor man. And I move, I shoot out of my stepmom's house. I have two jobs. I didn't have any time for education. I was like, fuck the education. I need to make money. My dad's not around anymore. I have to support myself. I challenged the state. I got my high school diploma, and then I just started working and partying all the time. Like, I didn't see a problem with it when my family wouldn't be able to contact me for days. They had no idea where I was. My mom would send me pictures of my little brothers, and they would leave me voicemails. My main priority was, when am I going to get drunk? When am I going to get high again? Because I'm not dealing with everything that's going on inside. I'm not dealing with any of it. I don't like life on life's terms. I don't like reality. I'm learning to, but especially, like, I didn't like reality. I wanted to create my own world, and it revolved around me. I attached myself to this man, and we get a little, like, one-bedroom apartment, and I feel like I'm the shit because I'm a senior in high school and the first one out of my friend group to move out and have my own little spot. And it was fun for a while. Like, I'd be lying if I said I didn't have fun. Like, I had a lot of fun, like, waking up at 6 in the morning and getting drunk and going surfing, you know? And then cops would show up at the apartment because it'd be too loud. And then, you know, I thought that was cool. Like, oh, I threw a blowout. Like, I'm cool. And I got arrested with my ex-husband, my boyfriend at the time, for, what, I don't even know. Like, an open party, something like that. A little misdemeanor. And that was, like, the first consequence that I had from my drinking. And that scared the shit out of me. I got back into the mind frame of, like, okay, I'm going to join the Marines again. But that didn't work out, because I was even in more fear, because I didn't know how to be an adult. I didn't know how to live with alcohol. I didn't know how to live without alcohol. So I'm still continuing to drink. I'm still continuing to use drugs. And I'm losing this relationship with this man because I'm freaking psycho. I'm throwing picture frames, putting holes in his lips. I'm cheating on him nonstop. I'm starting to hang out with just very dangerous, ruthless people. All out of fear, because I didn't want to be alone and I wanted to feel protected. And he, one night, it was after a really bad fight, and I remember, and he was like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be with you anymore. And I knew the solution to that was to get pregnant. So I trapped him, and I got pregnant, and I was like, yes, I'm so madly in love with you. And I was not in love with the man. It was just an obsession and, like, a control thing. So we get pregnant, and we move into his dad's house. I stopped drinking. I stopped all mind altering substances and get back into, like, church, because I thought church could heal me. And sometimes that works for some people, but for me, church and religion just doesn't work. And I start to fall into that like motherhood, like, okay, I'm going to be a mother. This is going to straighten up my life. I'm 19 years old. I got my shit together. He's going to help take care of me. And I convinced the man to join the military because we're both working two jobs and it's not going anywhere. He joins the military and then I'm like, I'm set. I'm set for life. Like, white picket fence. I got a military man. We're good. I got health insurance and he has a life insurance policy. So if anything ever happens to him because he's in the military, I'll be okay. I'll be good. We have our child. Meanwhile, after I had my child, my daughter, I convinced the doctors that I have really bad anxiety and my back really hurts. And I'm on the military post and it was so freely given, you know, because of all the stress that me, myself as a military wife was going through. And I'm drinking and I'm taking prescriptions and my husband is in basic and then in AIT and he's straightening up his life to help support our family. And I wasn't ready. Like, I was not ready at all. I thought that I could just pay a nanny to just take care of my kids because I didn't want to be a mother. Even though in the beginning I thought that it was going to save me and it was going to cure me. So I have a full-time nanny. I'm going to school. I got a little part-time job. I'm never around my child, ever. My husband has no idea what's going on. And then he comes back and I'm a wreck. I'm not eating, I'm not sleeping. When I am sleeping, it's because I literally blacked out. That's it. There's no, like, I would resent him, and I still kind of am jealous of him, how he can just lay down and go to sleep. I don't understand that. That's slowly coming back to me now. Like, I can lay down and go to sleep like a normal person, for the most part. So I'm convincing this man while he's watching me drink as soon as I wake up and pop pills that I'm okay. And that if we just move out of Florida, I'll be okay. You know, it's the people, it's where I grew up at. There's too much trauma here. You know, my dad died here and I can't be here anymore. So, you know, I tried the geographical cure. But the thing is I brought myself with me. And I thought that maybe if I moved out of the state into a whole new state, onto a military post where people seem to be somewhat, they got their shit together, I wouldn't bring me. Like, it would just be a whole new me because I'm really good at, like, reinventing myself. Wherever I go, like, I'm a chameleon. Like, I can just blend in because I can, like, emulate everything that everybody that's around me. Like, I can just emulate what they're doing and I'll fit in and they won't know. We move out of state. And we get pregnant again. And I am coming off of alcohol and benzos while I'm pregnant with my son. No one look at me, no one touched me. That's where I was at. I would just lay on the couch. Like, I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't bathe. Like, it was bad. And my daughter, this is how I know my God is real. Because when I wasn't there, I may have physically been there for my kids, but I wasn't mentally there. Like, I could care less. Because the only thing that mattered to me was substances. That's all that mattered to me. How I know my God is real is because those kids were always taken care of, no matter what I was doing. And I'm leeching off of my husband. I'm not providing or doing anything good for this family. And then the suicidal thoughts start coming in. And then this plan start coming in. It would get so dark where I would have these plans in my head of, I'm just going to get a tarp and I'm going to put it in the bathtub and I'm going to shoot myself and I'm going to wrap myself up in the tarp and I'm going to shoot myself so the cleanup won't be that bad and he won't have to see it. And I start, actively trying to commit suicide. And that poor man, like, it was so bad that when they would go to sleep, I would leave the house and I would just swallow every prescription I had. And I would park in a parking. There's a couple times where I would park in a hospital parking lot, so it would be easy to transport my body. Like, no one had to, my family didn't have to find me. It'd be doctors or nurses that found me, and they're used to that stuff, right? So they can just bring me into the hospital. This one time, I was drinking. I was really drunk, and I bought a gun from a pawn shop, and it was really easy to get a gun. I didn't have a record. I had one like little misdemeanor when I was 18, but it was easy. And I picked up a gun, and I had no idea what I was doing because I picked up target bullets, and I went to Walmart, picked up target bullets, and I drove to a hospital parking lot in the garage, and I had the gun in my mouth, but I couldn't pull the trigger. I could not pull the trigger, and that was God. You know, that was God. Something there stopped me because I really wanted to. And I went home and acted like everything was fine. Like, I remember walking back into the house and just fixing dinner and then, you know, putting the kids to bed and then going to bed, thinking that it's okay. I'm okay. I got this under control. It's just a bad day. That was just a bad day. Sun's going to still come up tomorrow. Anxiety had just gripped onto me, and I wasn't talking about how I was feeling, and I wasn't talking about what was going on. It's almost time to get sober. Hold on. So I start going to AA meetings, but I didn't know that you shouldn't drink. I didn't know that it started with the first drink. I'm drinking in between meetings. I'm going into these rooms. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm not asking for anybody's number. I'm just sitting in the back. And I'm like, okay, this going to meetings will keep me sober. And it would for like 2 days. So I finally go to rehab. My ex-husband was out in the field on post, and they were training for something. Big guns and machines, I don't know. And he called for his like weekly check-in, and I was like, you need to come home. I need help now. I've got a drinking problem. I'm an alcoholic. And these ladies at this AA meeting tell me that I need to go to detox. So come home now. And he had no idea. He was like, what do you want me to do with this? What do you want me to do? He comes back in and I go to rehab. But before I went to rehab, I called my auntie and I was like, yo, I'm checking myself into rehab. I need help. And my auntie was like, finally. And I was like, what? You don't even know. Like, you haven't seen me in years. You don't know. She was like, well, the phone calls that we would have at like midnight, I kind of knew, you know, it runs in the family. So of course, before you go to rehab, before I would go to rehab, I would get blitzed, because it was going to be the last time I ever drank. I start getting into rehabs after rehabs thinking, I'm just going to clean myself out and I'll be okay. I don't have a drinking problem. I have a control problem. That's it. It wasn't until I was being prospected because I surrounded myself with a treacherous group of people. I like dove headfirst into this like dangerous lifestyle out of fear because I just wanted protection. I just wanted to be accepted and I wanted somebody to love me. That was pretty much rock bottom for me. I emulated everybody that was around me and everything that they were doing, but I wanted to go harder. Meanwhile, I'm like dying inside, terrified out of my mind. But of course, I'm having to shove all these substances into my body to go and perform what we're supposed to be doing at the time. But I don't have to live like that anymore. So now it's time to get sober. I hit rock bottom. I'm in a very abusive relationship. And once again, I put this man on a pedestal and I made him my higher power. And I start to get into heavy core drugs, like heavy core. And there was a point where when I woke up one morning, I was like, I don't have a choice. I have to put something into my body in order to function and be okay. I don't have a choice. It was the hotels that kind of did it for me, that it was like, okay, I think I got a problem. I can't control this anymore. I lost everything. I lost my kids. CPS started to show up because I wasn't feeding my kids, and their teachers knew. But I was in such denial. such denial. CPS starts getting involved and they're like, hey, are you feeding your kids? But at that point in time, like, who has time to take care of children and who has time for hygiene and nutrition when I have to get drunk and I have to get this fixed? Like, I don't have time for that. By the grace of God, their dad came in and swooped him in, and I just handed him over, and I was like, okay, now's my chance to get help. Now's my chance. I'm going to clean my act up. And then I felt like at the time working on the relationship that I was in was more important, and building an entertainment label was more important, and I fell into the lifestyle. And then I lost everything because I was only making money to get drugs and alcohol. That was it. I wasn't paying bills. The electricity was shut off. I had no running water. It was so gross. I'm working on a documentary right now, and I was looking at videos, old videos that I have, and it was roach infested, and it was like, you know all those songs they're talking about, the trap house, it's so cold, da da da. Oh my God, that's so gross. The environment that I was in was so gross. But thank God, like, I come into this program and there's a shift in perspective. I get help finally. I go to a state detox because I have no money, I have no health insurance. And I get out and I go back to the house that I was staying at to get all my stuff, and my ex was there. And I was there for like 18 hours, and He just did everything he ever wanted to me. And I remember praying, like, okay, God, like, I'm clean and sober. And I'm like, okay, I get it now. Like, if the drugs and the alcohol doesn't kill me, it's going to be the lifestyle. And for me, a perspective that's been given to me now is, it's not getting out of that lifestyle is such a, that can be addicting too. Because once I stop putting drugs and alcohol into my body, like, life still starts to happen. I'm still having to live life on life's terms. Like, it's still going to happen no matter what. And I don't want to be miserable anymore. You know, I did some really gross, shady things to get what I wanted. I was, if I saw something that I wanted, I took it. And now I don't have to live like that anymore. So anyways, I come back into AA, I move to Atlanta, I move into a sober living, right down the road actually, and I come in, crawl back into the rooms again, and I was so desperate. Thank God for the gift of desperation, because if y'all would have told me to chop my pinky off, I would have bitched and complained about it, but I would have done it, because living on my own will and living on my own strength, it always ended me up in hotels getting the shit beat out of me. It always ended up like that. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. I move into sober living. And I get a sponsor. And I get a home group. And I start building a network outside of my sober living. That's what was key for me. And I start taking suggestions from my sponsor. And I start calling, making really awkward phone calls to other women. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but my sponsor told me that I should call you and see how you're doing and how you did it. So I'm here. And my home group just swept me up with discipline, with honesty, and taught me, like, open-mindedness. That's a word, yeah. In service, I start building friendships, and at first they're like, I'm terrified because I don't trust anybody, because I don't trust myself at all. I don't know what I'm going to do, and I don't know what this other person's going to do. But I can guarantee you there's nothing that I can say, do, thought, or have already said, done, or thought in this room and in other rooms alike that hasn't already been done. Like, I don't have to hide anymore. It was scary. Like, so I'm coming up on 3 years. My first year, I was scared shitless. I would wake up sick to my stomach, full of anxiety. And then I start taking the suggestions, like, just, like, muscle memory. Like, just get on your knees and pray. Say the third step prayer. Do this. Do that. Let's do your steps, you know. Let's do your inventory. Sit down and let's just get it all out. You're just cleaning the old shit out of yourself. And I start doing the steps with a sponsor, with a competent sponsor, a woman that I cannot walk all over and I cannot manipulate and I cannot lie to. I can try to lie. I really can. But the truth always comes out, because what happens in the dark always comes to the light. Always. And 9 times out of 10, when I'm talking to my sponsor and I want to lie, or I've lied, she just knows. She just knows, because she's done the same damn thing. And there's no judgment. That's the most freeing part. Like, there's no damn judgment from this woman. And I thought that, like, that building these friendships around me and having a sponsor, I didn't deserve it, and that they were going to judge me, and that they didn't know me, you know, like, you don't know me, because I'm unique, and I'm different, and I'm weird. Like, you can't, I'm unique. So yeah, I am, there are some unique things about me, and I am a little bit different. I'm definitely weird, but one thing's for sure, there's nothing unique about my alcoholism. Nothing at all. Like, it's not special, it's not different. I am just a garden variety alcoholic that took some suggestions, did step work, and the more that I pray, and the more that I just do these actions, the more transparent and the more that I can start to live in my truth. And I used to, I didn't know who the hell I was. I'm still learning who I am at, how old am I, 32? Yeah, I think.
Sure.
I think, how old am I? I'm still learning who I am, and that's okay. Like, I can be myself. The gifts of this program and the promises, like, I can be myself around my friends. I can be myself around my sponsor. I've gotten to that point. I've gotten to that point where, like, I can just say anything, and I can share an experience, and, like, I'm not afraid to anymore. But it took time. It took muscle memory. So just some things of some really eye-opening and just God moments from working these steps. You know, one of them is we have to make an amends to people. And I didn't know it at the time, but when I did my fifth step with my sponsor, she was like, I would say a person, and she would say, put a star next to that. And I'd be like, why? Well, we're not there yet. Don't worry about it. So she basically, like, helped me figure out, okay, this is everyone you're going to have to do an amends to. So it comes around the time where I have to go and make an amends to my ex-husband and my son and my daughter. And I go, and I'm so nervous, and I sit down with my ex-husband, and it's not this, like, huge, drawn-out, elaborate thing. It's very simple. The steps are very simple. And I tell him, you know, I can't imagine what it was like having an ex-wife, having a wife, and having a baby mother like me. I just can't. I don't get into nitty-gritty details when I make my amends. You know, like, I'm sorry I had multiple affairs on you. That's going to cause more harm. It's going to cause more harm. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered, Phil. And if there's any other way that I've hurt you, please let me know. What can I do to make this better? And this man, like, I was scared that he was going to be like, you did this and you're worthless and da da da. Remember the time? Because I'm sure there was shit that I did that I don't even remember. And all he said was, don't do what you did to me to the next man that you married. And I was like, what? Compassion and understanding and, like, forgiveness. So then I sat down with my son. At that time, he was 9, and, you know, I don't get into nitty-gritty details, like I said earlier. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm sorry that you were abused. I'm sorry that I neglected you. No, it's not about that. You know, like, I can't imagine what it was like having a mother like me. If there's any way that I've harmed you and you want to talk about it, I'm here. Let's talk about it. And my son, you know, what can I do to make this better? And my son says, Mama, I just want you to be okay. I just want you to be okay. And now, today, clearing, like, the wreckage of my past, whether it be financial, you know, marriages, children, I'm building a life. And my kids are actively in my life now. You know, like, my ex-husband trusted me with the children at first. He didn't want me to know where he lived. He didn't want me to know. He didn't want me to have access to them because I couldn't be trusted, because I was an active alcoholic. like I get to, I just had them 2 weekends ago. You were there 2 weekends ago. And my network, my AA network, is in their lives. They're helping me with my children because I don't know how to be a mother. I don't. A pivotal point for me was the third step. Just handing my life over to a higher power, you know, and mine's God. I don't apologize for that. I had religion growing up, but now I have spirituality. And that's what's kept me sober. Just not trying to do this shit on my own and on my own thinking, because I don't choose really good. I don't make good choices. I'm starting to be able to trust myself a little bit more with some choices, you know? Like, I can pay my bills on time now. You know, my kids are safe around me now. I have friends around me that when we plan to get together, we're not breaking the law anymore. And, like, that's a big thing. That's a big thing for me. We're not breaking the law anymore. We're not going to hurt somebody. And we're not trying to take something that's not ours. You know? Like, and we have fun. I didn't think that I was going to have fun getting sober. Like, I really didn't. But, like, I laugh to the point where it hurts. Like, I get that belly laugh, that, like, soul laugh. And I truly, truly believe it's because God, you know? Like, I know that that sounds, like, cheesy, but, like, it's God all the way. And sometimes I get pissed off at him. I get so pissed off at God. And I yell at him, and that's okay because he's a big boy and he can handle that. When I don't think what he wants for me is right, I tell him that, and I'm always wrong. Always wrong. And I have a pretty simple life now, and I get excited talking about it. I think I'm still on fire of, like, getting sober and still being sober. Maybe someday I'll calm down, you know, but I'm on fire for life now because I want to live. Like, I want to live an honest life. I want to be transparent. I want to be comfortable in my skin. And I have self-worth now. And that took a long time to get. And it's because I've been doing these suggestions, and I did these steps, and I made these amends, and I started paying off my debt. And I never thought that I would, like, work on my credit getting sober. Like, fuck that. I'm not dealing with that. Do you have any idea how much debt I'm in? But, you know, our literature tells us we have to clean it up. Like, people provided services, hospital bills, you know, college, like, they provided a service. That's, you got to pay them back. You got to pay them back. That's robbing somebody. And I don't live like that anymore. And I have, like, I've got credit now, and I've got my own little, like, one bedroom apartment. It took me 2 years in sober living, but for me, like, that's a peak in life. Like, I am self-supporting by my own contributions, because AA's provided a life for me, right? That, like, I can show up to a job now. Like, I can pay my bills on time now. I can pay my car note. You know, I don't make money just to get drunk and high anymore. Like, I don't want to. Yeah. One thing that helps too is, when I start to panic about, I have to go the rest of my life without putting, like, with just being, just raw dogging it. Like, I gotta feel all this shit. I have to feel it. But it's just for today. It's just for today. So I can stay in the here, and I can stay in the now, and I know that God's got me, no matter what. So thanks for letting me share.
Last night I truly hit a new low. Somewhere strange to me, as I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down, right now. feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take the edge, you see. It's the bottle, the book, or the gun for me. Seems like everyone's out to get me. Trouble always following me. Feeling like I just can't outrun. Demons that are all around me. I'm a victim of life's sin.